You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to Every Voice Matters. I am really excited about my guest today because she's actually somebody I've known for quite a while. And she has certainly been on a journey. When I first met her, she was working in corporate America. And she had called me about her son. Since then, she has gone through many changes, not only as a parent, but in her career. And she has recently written a book called Skunk Nugget Parenting. I've had quite a few people ask me what that means. And so she's going to talk about that today. And she has learned some remarkable lessons on her journey. And I am very happy to introduce today Amanda Redwine, author, mom, parent coach, and now therapist.
Yes.
Hi. Hey, Amanda, so great to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I have been looking forward to this since we set it up.
Oh, me too. And especially because I've known you for such a long period of time.
Yes.
You know, when I first met you, you were working in corporate America. Mm-hmm. And you had a son who at that time was in crises.
Oh, yes.
And you went through quite a journey. So why don't you share a little bit about where you were at that time, and let's talk about where you are today.
Sure. So flashback to the beginning of 2016. It's January. It's cold out. I've just moved to Indiana for a job. And things with my son, he was 13 at the time. We're getting worse and worse and worse. And we had the typical American story, right? Divorced parents, custody battle, you know, nasty custody swaps, that whole thing. So when he was four, I went bankrupt fighting for custody of him. So at 13, he's with me and things are getting more and more tense all the time. He's in the basement pretty much every minute of every day, addicted to gaming, addicted to the internet, and all the stuff that comes with the internet, barely going to school. So one morning, I was sitting in the garage, and I'm sitting at the wheel of my car because I've already spent the last hour fighting with him about getting up and going to school. And I know that if I leave and he misses that bus, I'm going to have to turn around and go get him and take him to school. So I wasn't going to leave until I was sure that he got on the bus. So the bus comes and goes, and I'm sitting there, and I am just fuming. I'm so angry. But I'm also really scared because things were so intense with him that I had only gotten as far in my head as, okay, if he's violent, I call the police. And if he's suicidal, I call an ambulance. But I never...
That's a good place to be. You know,
oh God, it was so and so isolating. This isn't the kind of thing that you tell other people. And I was an accountant, so and I worked for one of the top three automakers. And so, you know, you don't go to work and say, oh my God, my family is a disaster, it's a dumpster fire. You go to work and you say, everything's fine, everything's great. So, you know, I had my mask on all the time. And yet here I was really afraid that my son was going to go off in a rage at some point and maybe even hurt or kill himself in a rage, simply because he could not stop himself. And I was scared to death. If I had to leave him home alone,
not knowing what would happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, the hardest time in my life. And so, and also there's very little in kind of pop culture, you know, or even college or anything to teach you about what do you do when your teenager goes off the rails. obviously you and I now have a whole lot more information about that. But at the time, I didn't know anything.
No, you don't. You're paralyzed.
Yes. And it's just the worst. It makes me so angry that parents go through this and then I meet them later and they say, oh, I thought I was the only one. And I just want to hug them and say, oh, honey. So long story short is I'm sitting in the car. My cell phone dings and it's a text message from my son. And I open it. It's a video. And it's a video from the night before of him cutting his wrists. Mm. And that is a video that you can never unsee.
Right.
And I remember sitting there for just a second and kind of like, oh, and I knew he was alive and he was okay because I had just been talking to him. But I also knew that from that point forward, everything had to change. That we had entered a whole new realm that was way beyond what I could handle. So I went inside and I said, you're going to want to put pants on. He said, what for? And I said, well, if I have to call an ambulance, you probably are going to want to have pants on. So, and this is the most surreal part of all this. So he gets up, gets dressed, gets in the car. We take the dogs to the kennel, and then off we go to the emergency room. And we're sitting in the emergency room, and the nurse said to my son, well, what did you use to cut your wrist? You know, was it like a rusty nail or something? And he said, no, that's how you get tetanus. And honest to God, Dory, if I could have reached across that exam table and popped his head off like a dandelion, I would have. Oh, I'm so mad. And at the same time, also just at my wit's end.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, because there are these moments where it just, a lot of his behavior looked completely just oppositional, just rotten teenager, you know, sassy. But it had this undercurrent of danger, right? That the stakes were awfully high. And also there was this feeling that there was more to this than I knew, that I understood. So, for example, the night before, he had told me that he was getting bullied at school. Right. Now, I'm a mama bear, right? So if I said to him, I vividly remember, I said, give me a name, just a name. I said, I will light that kid up. I said, you know, give me a comment, give me something so that I have something to go to the school with. And I was ready to go into full-on protection mode. And he couldn't do it. And the reason he couldn't do it, I learned much later, was because saying that he was getting bullied was the language that he had access to talk about his autism, which was undiagnosed.
Right.
So he was inpatient for 10 days. And that acute care is nothing more than just really keeping them from killing themselves.
It is. It's a Band-Aid approach. And I mean, and that's what the hospitals are there for, is to handle the crises in the moment.
Yep. Yep. But there's nothing for parents, or I mean, right. At least at the unit where my son was, there was nothing. We had one session. I had a couple phone calls maybe with the therapist at the program, but I would rush home and rush to visiting hours. And we were so enmeshed at this point that, you know, I'm in crisis because he's in crisis, which was not good for anybody. And he was so angry about being captive that he would abuse me up one side and down the other, to the point where even a couple nights where the staff said to me, you know what, this isn't productive. You need to leave. So we get towards the end of the 10 days and they said to me, well, he can go home. And I said, what? Nothing has changed. Absolutely. I mean, yes, you put him on some meds, but what about his school situation is different? What about his view on the world or his coping skills? None of that changed. I hadn't changed, right? Because I hadn't even had any conversations with any professionals. And it was, that was the scariest part, I think, was knowing that if I brought him home, and he would say to me, "Oh, I can do online school, Mom." And I said, "You can't get upstairs for dinner. What makes you think I'm going to put you in charge of your academic life?" So that's when you start Googling.
Right. And I do want to mention that if anyone would like to call in and ask Amanda a question, you can do that today by calling 323-203-0815. So now that he's being released from the hospital and...
Yeah, I'm freaking out. And of course, these moments of intense crisis do nothing, no good things for a custody situation that's already contentious. Mm. And so at that point, we're looking for educational placements, right? Because I'm thinking, okay, well, it's the school that's not working for him. And so my ex, who was a Marine, came up with, well, he needs to go to military school. And the same as my son didn't have the right language to talk about what was going on. I didn't either. But what I knew in every fiber of my being was that more structure and more discipline was going to backfire in the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all I ever knew, you know, sort of Catholic school or military school. That was kind of.
That was pretty common, you know, for a lot of parents, that's a pretty common thought when you're not in this world of treatment, so to speak. That's what you think of.
Yep. So, and this is where I had the divine intervention of the magical World Wide Web that brought me to you. And I remember I called you out of the blue and you talked to me for free at first. And I was like, yes, this is amazing. And you said, clear as day, well, of course it's not going to work if he comes home. And I thought, oh my God, finally somebody sees this. And literally, Dory, you were the first person on the planet to confirm for me this gut, this knot I had in my stomach that was not going to work. And so to have somebody who knew something about all of this, you know, to be the expert and to confirm my suspicions, I was on board 100%.
Well, I'm glad I was there.
Oh my God. You have no idea. Saved our family, literally saved our family. So that was a Tuesday probably. And Friday night at 3 o'clock in the morning, the goons came, as the kids would call it. The transport team came because I knew, with as abusive as he was in the hospital, what the hell was it going to be like in the Las Vegas airport? So I knew that was a terrible idea for me to try to transport him. So Dory to the rescue, the transporters came, and every parent I've ever talked to that goes through this experience, it's a horrible experience because you don't.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, fun. No. And all the professionals that, from you to the company that we use to the transporters, were so professional and so helpful and calming.
It's emotional. It's scary.
Oh my God. Yes.
So many things are going on through, you know, your mind at the time and your body is reacting to all of those emotions as well.
Oh, and you keep it a secret from your child.
Yes.
Because if you tell your child, they're going to run or blow up or something really bad is going to happen. Because at that point you've committed, right? You've set that plan in motion. And there are many times in between the making of the decision and the exit of the house that you want to pump the brakes.
Sure. You question yourself all the time. Absolutely.
Because it's
absolutely
an incredible financial commitment.
Yes.
And it moves a lot faster than you would think because, I hope we get to talk about this, about the social justice pieces of this around.
Well, please do. I mean, there's no format here. I want you to jump in with the things that you think are important for people to know and hear about.
Yeah. I was incredibly lucky because we had saved money for Cale's college since he was born. So he had a large college fund already amassed. So that's what we used mm-hmm. to pay for transport, to pay for wilderness, to pay for therapeutic boarding school. Had we not had that, I don't know how in the world the timing of all that comes together, where you try to sue your school district to get them to fund it. It's so being on this side of it now, 5 years later, I think it's a travesty that inpatient programs don't know about wilderness, that school districts aren't promoting it. It's an incredible intervention. The way you described it to me was, that boy needs some sunshine, some good food, and some good sleep. And I remember thinking, what? Oh, okay. But again, this is, you know, wilderness is not something that's well known or talked about.
Yeah, a lot of therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists don't know about wilderness, you know, either. And it still continues today to be an area of education. A lot of them are aware of, you know, the short-term 30-day programs, but they're just, you know, they're not out there in the treatment world finding out about this kind of information. And I really do think, I wish there was a way, you know, in order to help them and educate them and bring them on board for them to get more information, but they're so office bound mm-hmm. is what I hear from them.
Yes. You
know, we're not going to take time out to go visit a program. We're not going to take time to go attend a conference. We're not going to take time, you know, that's not what we do. And right. So it does, there is that wall and mm-hmm. it's a constant battle really in educating them about, you know, what is available for clients other than, you know, the short 30-day, you know, restarts that sometimes those work. And a lot of times they don't.
Right, right. I think going into it, I had no idea how much was involved in the therapeutic aspects of a wilderness program. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what knowledge I brought to it was, you know, maybe having seen like a boot camp on Lori Povich or something.
And people still say, so are you recommending a boot camp? It's like, yeah. No. And yes, again, educating them about the therapeutic aspects and mm-hmm. parents are involved.
Yes.
The family situation. Go out and hike across the backcountry with a backpack until you see them again. There is
right,
a process
right.
that's happening every day.
And everything about it is so intentional, which yeah. I just love. But going into it, I had no understanding of that at all. And so I had no idea that the way that the therapists and the field guides use nature to create consequences for behavior or decisions.
Right.
So, you know, kid, you graduated, you get to do a 2-day solo. You don't have to build a good shelter. But guess what? You're the one that's going to be cold and wet. Not your mom, not your teachers. You, my friend.
And how you does that relate make to real life, you know, as well? In
yes.
them choosing not to do self-care, not care about themselves enough to want to learn things, to take care of them, and also to get those little brain synapses working that have kind of been in yes. sleep mode for a long time.
I really think with electronics and the addiction issues that we are seeing in our society today, and I would definitely encourage your listeners to watch movies like The Social Dilemma, mm-hmm. To see that our kids are literally brainwashed by large companies like Google and Facebook and the gaming companies to keep their attention.
Absolutely. Well, and adults as well, not just kids.
Oh,
everybody.
Yeah, society. that wilderness, in my mind, has become an even more important type of intervention where we really can pluck the kid out, or the adult for that matter,
right,
out of the everyday patterns and put them in this completely novel situation, because nobody goes and sleeps in the snow and hikes in Utah on purpose. Well, I guess some people do, but
yeah, some people do.
Very few people do that with a tarp. So it is an incredibly powerful transformation that can happen. And I can't remember if it was you or who it was that likened wilderness is like a microwave in terms of getting rapid behavioral change from your kiddo. Because again, you change everything about their existence.
Well, so, distractions, when they can't pick up their phone to call somebody, yep, when they can't go into their room and shut the door, when they can't walk off and leave the house and not come back for days at a time. Those mm-hmm. things, you know, have been their coping mechanisms actually in the past when they yep. haven't been able to sustain, you know, what's going on in their life. So having those things removed and then having them self-focus mm-hmm. is something they haven't done before.
And removing them from their family of origin.
Yeah, which from the situations that's been taking place.
Really powerful.
So what was that like for you when he was gone?
At first, I watched them drive away at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I fell into the fetal position in my dining room and just sobbed, absolutely sobbed. Then I took 2 Benadryl and climbed in my bed with some Godiva chocolate. And I think I slept for about 12 hours because of the stress.
Yeah.
Because literally I was hyper vigilant for months before that.
Right.
And completely enmeshed.
Right.
So pedaling really, really hard, but not getting anywhere. So the first days and weeks were painful in that I felt like I was grieving, because the source of my addiction fulfillment, which was my son, was removed. And I got almost no information. I'd talk to the therapist for an hour a week. So I used to joke and say, you know, I only have to parent for an hour a week. This is fantastic. but it left this huge void in my life that all of a sudden I realized, and you forced me into parent coaching, thank God, to realize that all of that time and space belongs to me, not to my son. And that it's my obligation to fill my life, my one precious life, with things that bring me joy and happiness, because my son may not ever, for that matter, be able to fill his own life with joy and happiness. And so if I'm waiting on him, I'm going to be waiting a long time.
Long time. Yeah.
So in the simple language, his therapist said to me, listen, we've got this. Go focus on yourself. And I was like, that's crazy. You know, I'm not the problem here. This skunky snot child is the problem.
Is that where the title of your book came from?
That is exactly where it came from. My sister talks about our kids and says we love them skunky, because okay. it's much easier with other people's kids when they're kind of sassy and right. you know, not perfect. It's fun because they're not your kids, but when it's your kid, the yeah. other thing. So that's where the skunk part came from.
Okay.
The skunk nugget part came because my son's wilderness and therapeutic boarding school were in Utah, which is full of Mormons, and Mormons don't curse. And so I had to clean up my language a lot to interact with the professionals in Utah, because I worked in factories all my life. And so
believe me, they've heard it.
True.
They do work in treatment.
Yeah. So raging asshole was not going to be acceptable. So I had to come up with skunk nugget.
Okay.
But also, I think as I got more perspective on why my son was behaving the way he was and some detachment from it, it did become funnier.
And
it did become
helped for you to understand what was going on.
I mean, oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Things that you didn't even think were happening
I had no idea that what was going on for my son was that his brain processes everything through his limbic system first, mm-hmm. which is much like a 2 or 3 year old, right? They're either really happy or really mad or really sad, but there's no in between.
Right.
The limbic system is very effective at keeping us safe. And so for my son, perceiving everything, every sensory input he gets as a physical threat, first and foremost, that's exhausting when I started to think about what that must be like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't live like that. So when I was able to step back and say, wow, this is about anxiety. It's not about opposition. He's not fighting because he wants to fight. He's fighting because he doesn't feel safe.
Right.
And that blew my mind. I had no understanding of the way that his brain wiring was driving his perceptions of the world. And the truth is, it wasn't until he was at Wilderness that we even learned that he had autism.
Right.
Or that his... the speed with which he interprets nonverbal signals, like your expression, like the tone of your voice, is 3 standard deviations lower than average. And that kid's brilliant.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, he's brilliant. And so that was
NASA one day.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, the Supreme Court or something.
Yes, absolutely.
But for the first time to figure out why this kid who is so incredibly smart cannot do homework to save his life, all of a sudden it started to make more sense.
It's so powerful when parents actually engage in getting that testing done, because they're making assumptions, and even therapists that have seen the kids have made assumptions based on their behaviors. And mm-hmm. And they get labeled with all kinds of things or medicated for all kinds of things that truly isn't helping them. So having that,
yep.
that psychological understanding of who they are as a person themselves and mm-hmm. how they
see. And at 13, we weren't at that phase of individuation really. I mean, obviously he thought he was, but you know, we were thinking that would be later teen right. years. And yeah. so,
it's just,
you know, we didn't treat him like a little adult who might have his own struggles. You know, he's always 4 to us.
So when he was going from residential then, I mean, going from Wilderness to residential, what was that experience like? Because now you actually do have more contact with him and you're actually yes. doing more work with him face to face.
Oh, yeah. so based on the testing, then we had a much better sense for what his next school needed to,
right.
to be to support him. Now, if you had told me from that first Tuesday, oh, by the way, your child is going away for 2 years, I would have hung up the phone.
I don't know that when I first talked to you. I mean, this is not a one size fits all situation. Every
right.
child is different. Every family is different. Every need is different. So, yeah, I don't want to throw that out. And
no, thank God you didn't.
You know, have somebody go, oh, my God, and hang up the phone, because we don't know. I mean, we really do take it
right.
in steps. of what's yeah. coming. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reality is that most kids go from wilderness to another program.
Most kids do. I would say yep. 93 to 95% kids
yep.
do. Yeah. Even
so that's kind of like the little known secret that the therapy side of the world knows that parents might not know when they go into that. That you know, that you go into it hoping.
Yeah, don't want to make that assumption. But yeah, it's there.
Yep. And I think as a parent, you go into it hoping that the wilderness intervention
sure.
will be sufficient.
Yeah, let's do a reset.
Right. But the problem is you're not dealing with a fully cooked brain.
Right.
So even though you get this microwave rapid change, when you pluck that kid out and plunk them back at home, they haven't practiced any of those coping skills in real life.
Real life.
And they bring all of that dysfunction from the original relationships, because 90 days isn't enough for parents to heal from the trauma, or right. the kid for that matter. So long story short is my son went to a special school in Utah, specifically like the most narrow slice in the world of young men with autism, with very high IQs, with slow nonverbal processing. And yet they were all about as different as you could possibly be, even though they have some really intense commonalities.
Yep.
And we could not have found a better placement for him. It would not, there isn't a better place in the world, in my opinion. Another piece of advice that you gave me that was so helpful was to be mindful of the logistics of getting there. Because if it takes you a day and a half to get there and you're going there every 6 weeks, that gets old in a hurry. But you had the wisdom of knowing, you know, this might be 2 years. You might be doing this a lot. So, but the staff of the school that Kale went to, they're like my family. I'm still close with them today because, again, it is such an intense thing to send your child to out of home treatment, that you build a very strong community of people who get it, people who've done it, people who understand why you might do it.
Parents that you get to connect with as well.
Oh my God. The school had parent seminars about every 3 months or so, and they'd be 3 or 4 days long, and they would kick it off with a dinner. And I can remember my first dinner, and here were 60 people, all parents, in varying stages of, you know, some of them, their kids had just gotten there. Some of them were old veterans. And in every single pair of eyes to have that understanding of, oh, you had to call the police on your child. Or, you know, you've cried every day for a year. And those parents got it and were still showing up so fiercely in support of their skunk nuggets, who are rotten. I mean, they're a lot like Brillo pads, you know, they're just scrap. They are. But they're probably, I have learned now, they're not the steel wool Brillo pads. They're like those, the sponges with the scratchy side, but they're really mushy underneath. The problem is that they've created this crust for themselves as a method of protection. So my son went to therapeutic boarding school. About a week into it, I met all these parents and I thought, oh my God, the parents in this process need help, because the programs are all, both wilderness and therapeutic boarding school, their focus is the kid. The kid is the identified client, if you will, right? They're the billable hours.
So where along this process, as you're working in the corporate world, did you start looking at yourself and saying, I want to do something different?
Honestly, I think making the decision from the moment you make the decision to send your kid out of home for placement, you're never the same. I wasn't anyway. I haven't been. because that took such courage and just was so outside of everything that I knew, that after you make a decision like that, you kind of have to reevaluate who you are and what's important to you. I mean, I felt like kind of a badass, you know, like I sent my son to sleep in the snow. How you like me now? But I did decide to approach talking with people about my decision and what my family was going through the same way that I do about the fact that I'm married to a woman, which is I feel a responsibility to normalize this stuff. You know, I don't have any friends who are Korean, right? So if I met somebody who was Korean and they said, come to my house for dinner, I would freak out because I don't know anything about Korean customs. It's the same thing. People freak out about the idea that I'm married to a woman, but the truth is we're the most boring people in the entire world. So
it's your sense of humor that keeps you going.
I guess so. So I decided from the very beginning when I sent my son that I was going to, anybody who asked me how he was, I was going to tell him. I was going to be open kimono about, you know, it's a disaster. You know, he climbed a mountain just so he could pee on it. I mean, right. You know, like, I don't know if this kid is ever going to get it together. And it was amazing. And so here I am in this corporate world. And I'd been doing that for 15 years. So, you know, I was well-versed in the, you know, who you are at work. So all of a sudden I start being vulnerable with people. And then they started being vulnerable with me and saying, oh, I have a nephew who's struggling. Or, you know, my niece went to drug treatment last year. Or my daughter has an eating disorder. Or 1,000 different permutations.
I'll start.
But all of a
sudden sharing when they realize. Yeah. They're not the only ones.
Yes.
So vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was really beautiful to me. And I thought, I began to, you know, it's like I was looking at my corporate job and then I have all this meaningful stuff that I'm doing with my son and I'm doing with my parent coach and with other human beings. And then I'm looking at this making rich people richer job. And it just has no meaning for me. Mm-hmm. So I knew something had to change. Obviously, I needed to keep working because I had to keep paying bills. So in 2017, I started a master's in counseling. And I just kind of did it on a lark. I thought, you know, I'll just take one class at a time. We'll see what happens. Now, maybe someday I'll actually finish. I had no plan for how I was going to do the field work. No plan. So that's how I've done it, one class at a time. And I'm wrapping up in May. So thank you. Thank you. It's
and you wrote a book during this time.
I did. The book, I want to say, pretty much wrote itself. It almost really felt like I had to give birth to the book because it was rolling around in my head. You know, throughout this process, I have been introduced to some of the most amazing professionals in the world who are working with struggling teenagers. Primary among them, Brad Reedy, for example.
Absolutely.
Who does these podcasts and books. And, you know, I'm a total fangirl, let me tell you. He liked a post of mine on Facebook. And it went all around with my wilderness parent group. They were like, oh, my God.
I'll have to get Brad on the radio show then.
Yes. So being exposed to all of that just really increased my desire. It helped me solidify the thought processes that I went through and the growth that I went through from the dining room floor to, you know, 4 years later, being able to say to the police officer in my foyer at 2:30 in the morning, thank you for helping me hold a boundary. He looked at me like I was nuts. But that's the journey, right? Is the ability to separate yourself and have the chaos. It can still exist and it still gets overwhelming, but I just have a whole new set of skills. And so I felt like I wanted to put something out there from the parent perspective, because there's lots of stuff from professional perspective. And Brad Reed will tell you that his own kids have been to wilderness. So he does have the parent perspective, but I wanted something from a mom's perspective, because there is very little out there about the realistic look at what is it like to say that you can't parent your teenager, that it's harder than the skills you have to contain it.
It makes you feel less than as a parent.
Oh my God. And you know, the parents that I have met on this journey are the most beautiful human beings who love their kids so fiercely. You don't get your kid.
Two things they say to parents is, because a lot of them say that they live in guilt. And I say guilt is the gift that loves to keep on giving. So give that some thought. And two is, we all do the best we can with what we know in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we know better, we can do better. But looking back and saying, I wish I would have, I wish I could have, I should have known better. No, that's what we know in the moment. And it takes a really brave parent, you know, I call them brave parents, to make that decision. To have, you know, into whatever type of treatment they need to be going.
Sure.
It's very hard.
And I think for me, the big change, it was almost like a switch that flipped, was when I realized that we don't let teenagers make decisions because they make bad decisions.
Children.
Right, exactly. Children. And so, of course, he isn't going to be happy about going to wilderness. He isn't going to be happy about going to therapeutic boarding school. And guess what? You're the parent. That's the deal.
Yeah.
He can be angry, but you don't have to apologize for saving his life. And so that was really empowering for me to take on that kind of distance of, I'm still the parent. So you can hate me forever.
Sometimes in all of the chaos that's going on, where it's so uncomfortable, you do let the boundaries go. You do become overly permissive. You kind of let anything happen just because you're wanting to have some peace for a period of time.
Yes. And especially if the parent brings baggage to the relationship. For example, I grew up in an alcoholic home.
Right. We all bring baggage into our relationships, even with our kids. And it's a very, you know, uncomfortable feeling for the parents also to be doing their own work. And I know you're now involved also in parent coaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's really important for parents to get their own support. Because again, the programs are focused on the kids, but the truth is the parents have to change. Tim Thain wrote a book called Not by Chance, and I love this book. And he likens it to a puzzle. And if you pluck out one piece of the puzzle, that being the kid, and send them off to treatment to get their edges rounded off, when they come back, if you haven't rearranged the puzzle, there's nowhere for that kid to go but their old patterns and behaviors.
Right. They're going to do what's comfortable and known. Yeah.
Exactly. We all have our factory default settings, right? So, you know, when I get triggered by my kid, I'm going to get all sarcastic and nasty because that's just my default setting.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a lot of emotional development to learn, for example, how to walk away from a conflict and take my power with me, that I could win by losing. That was amazing. So, I don't even remember how we got on that topic, but
we're just talking about parent coaching and
so
and all the things that you learned through that process,
and just to have an ally, because again, your kid can't be your ally. because they're not going to be happy. That's how we know it's good parenting. That's right. How we know it's working. And so just to, again, take away some of that isolation and that shame and help parents to realize they always had all the tools that they needed. They just needed some support and a little bit of guidance here and there, but mostly just support.
So what advice would you give to a parent who is considering, treatment for their child, whatever that might be, whether it's wilderness, residential, short-term program, as they're sitting at home in crises and feeling very confused, scared? You know, what advice would you give them in your parent coaching aspect, in your therapeutic aspect of, you know, how to be able to clear their mind enough to make a healthy decision?
My first piece of advice would be to get an education consultant. I did not know what an education consultant was 5 years ago. I thought they were people who helped people get into snooty boarding schools or do a year abroad program. I thought it was very fancy, you know, or you're moving to a new place. I had no idea that education consultants really are experts in, well, the therapeutic ones, in therapeutic programs. And they travel to the programs and they know the staff. And so for me, when I hooked up with you, I was able to let go of needing to pick the program or to know everything, because I knew how much I did not know, which was so scary. And so I was able to just say, well, these are the three programs she asked me to look at, and I just have to pick from one of these three. It was such a relief to have somebody on the team who knew something. When you bring the baby home and somebody comes over and helps.
Yeah, there are educational consultants all across the United States. There's even international educational consultants. Parents can Google educational consultants in their area or just, you know, educational consultants in general. There is an association called IECA, Independent Educational Consultants Association, where parents can look for consultants that help them in their specific areas. But it's good, you know, I think sometimes it's good even to just have a conversation with somebody.
It changed everything from my perspective. It absolutely did. Because my local folks, and this will happen anywhere you are, is that the local resources may not have any experience with it.
Right. They don't know where to go.
And the difference is when you have an education consultant, so let's say we decide, you know, your kid's going on Friday, your consultant knows the staff at the program, probably handpicked your therapist because they know they've met the therapist, they know what they're strong at, and they've assessed your kid enough to find a good placement that fits. The cost of making a bad choice, an uneducated choice, is so high that the investment in an education consultant is absolutely worth it. And it's so much more than just the selection of the program. I had no idea that you would be talking to the program every week as much as I was, and really kind of shadowing everything with my son all the way through. And that was so reassuring.
Oh, good. So as we're wrapping up today, Amanda, I wish we had so much more time because there's just so much more to share. Please, again, share the name of your book and where people can find it.
My book is Skunk Nugget Parenting, and it is available on Amazon and on Kindle.
Okay. And what would be your one last piece of advice to give people who, you know, are maybe looking at having to have their kid transported, because that's also, you know, one of the hard considerations in this process.
Yeah. I think the one piece of advice I would have is to get some parent references from the programs that you're looking at, or from your education consultant, because those are the folks that have lived it, you know, who fell on the dining room floor that night. because they can tell you what worked for them and what didn't. And there are Facebook groups of parents. There's a whole parent community out here just waiting to welcome you to the flock.
Good. Well, I've so enjoyed having you be with me today. And
thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on your upcoming May graduation. Thank you. That you're going to be doing with Brad Reedy and his group as well. I know that it'll be quite an adventure, you know, for you. And I look forward to staying in touch. I do want to say next week, we're going to have a group of people joining us, Amy, Ben, and Jesse, who are with Stretch Zone here in Arvada and Broomfield. And they're actually going to talk about how stretching can assist your body, mind, and spirit. And I have seen them myself. They really have a passion about what they're doing and a purpose. And that's really what Every Voice Matters is about, is people sharing their passions and their purposes in all different walks of life as to what they're doing. And, you know, it's heartfelt. So I leave you this week as I'm continuing to read my Joseph Campbell companion book again for, I don't know, the umpteenth time. Life is without meaning. You bring meaning to it. And to remember that just like with Amanda changing her career, finding her passion in life, we all have the opportunity to do that. So do what's meaningful for you. And it actually will have a ripple effect on so many others when you do that. Thank you, everyone. See you next week on Thursday, 11 Pacific time, 12 Mountain time. I have to remember all the time zones, 1 Central and 2 Eastern. Take care, stay safe, and be well. Bye, everyone.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.